Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Badlands Podcast, the only podcast out there that is 100% chiseled and is proudly part of the Chairshot Media Group and is also now available on Smart to Death Radio. I am Mags, and this is going to be the last time I'm going to keep mentioning how much of a good run of episodes Paul's turned up to now, because it's getting a little bit boring. I think it's like 8 episodes in a row. Hello to my my illustrious co-host, Mr. Paul Talley.
What a knock I'm on, eh? Doing well. It doesn't quite match yours, but but I'm doing all right. I'm grateful to you two for at first I was grateful for you two for rescheduling so I can continue my good run, and then because we've moved this episode forward one day, and I prepared for the wrong topic, I shortchanged myself on how much prep time I had. So,
which topic did you prep for?
Well, I'm going to give away the topic, aren't I? But I read tonight's topic is not the worst ever pay per views. Okay. Mr. Tolly read worst ever pay per views. So, but I've corrected that now.
I can veto them if you want to put forward your worst ever pay per views. I mean, technically, they do include a match, quite a few horrible matches.
But at least I've got that work done now if we ever do that topic.
Yeah, that's exactly why I went with this topic, because I'd already pre-prepared doing another podcast and thought, you know what, that's a good idea. I'm stealing
that. Lazy bastard.
No, I picked different picks. No, I've researched different picks. It was just thought it was a good idea. Anyway, let's introduce the guest that we've roped into this topic. And just for context, listeners, when I told our guest this topic, his reply was, "Oh, fuck off." So he knew we'd been bummed out with a terrible topic. It's James from That 90s Wrestling Podcast. James, how are you?
Very good, Max. Thanks for having me. It's a long time coming there. Hi again, Paul. I think it was a few weeks ago when we chatted, but me and Mags, it's been quite a while ago now. I think when I done my second show, you was there to the helping hand, and it's been a long time coming, so I'm glad you invited me to come on.
Yeah, no problem. It's a pleasure to have you on, and yeah, your podcast has kind of took a massive change over the last few weeks or so, going from how it originally started. You've really kind of rolled with punches and you pulled out some amazing interviews. Let us know about how that kind of worked out. How did you like kind of change from reviewing crappy pay-per-views from the 90s to talking to some of the the big names in wrestling today.
Yeah, so obviously the name of my podcast makes no sense at all these days. I guess I'll be honest. So the original concept, one of my favorite wrestling podcasts is OSW Review, the three Irish guys, and they started reviewing the wrestling PPVs from WrestleMania 1 onwards, and I love their show. So I thought, oh, that's a popular show. I'll try and rip off that gimmick. And it was going okay. But it's weird. The reason it changed, and it's so random that it did change, because of all the people who came onto my show, it was just the lady from TNA, Goldilocks. She was like one of the interviewers, and she messaged me, and she was like, oh, I would like to come on the show. I'm like, okay, then. And got talking to her, and I was like, I like this interview, Malarkey. And I thought, I wonder if I can get some more guests on. And just basically, you know, accepting, believe me, I've been rejected so many times, sending off emails. And I thought, fuck it, I'll just try and get some guests. Managed to interview, message one guy from Impact. He pushed me along to the next guy, got to talk to the media relations guy, George Foreman. And one thing led to another. Now I've been interviewing Impact stars. And yes, so I've interviewed Ace Austin, which was Deonna Purrazzo, which my co-host was very happy with because he had a massive crush on her. And Eric Young, we interviewed the other week, which was great because I've watched him since 06 now. And yeah, so the show now, it's evolved from, like, the pay-per-view reviews is definitely on the back burner for now. Now I really am focused on getting the interviews. And like I said, the other week, last week, interview Nick Aldis, which us British fans, you know, he's our guy, like first English world champion in a major company and that, you know what I mean? And he was a great talk to, and got a few surprises in the pipeline coming up, so hopefully they come forward. But yeah, so now when people ask me, what does that 90s wrestling podcast mean? I just try and say to them, oh, well, we was all brought up in the 90s and that was our era.
I mean, we only talked about probably about 4 weeks ago, and it feels like you've blown up since then. You're so good at what you do. I really,
yeah.
Your interviews are excellent. You. That's a real skill, and you're excellent at it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to sound arrogant, but I've listened to podcasters who's got interviews, and some like channels I've watched, they've had some pretty good guests. And don't get me wrong, my first interview, I was nervous. But when I've seen these people interview these stars, they're very timid and they don't, they just like, okay, yes. And there's like no oomph, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I try not to talk over the guests, but when I'm interviewing these people, I like to just talk to them like I'm having a conversation with like you guys, if you know what I mean. And I try to keep it lighthearted, have a bit of back and forth laughter with them. And yeah, it's definitely changed, and especially now the show has become more YouTube based, I suppose. I have started to put the interviews back on the audio platforms as well, because obviously I know not everyone wants to look at a screen for 2 or 3 hours watching an interview, so they'd rather just stick the headphones in and listen to it at work or such. But I think one of the things I've realized my strength through doing these episodes is that I'm not too bad at actually interviewing the guests and coming up with subjects to talk to them. So that means a lot, Paul. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Perhaps when lockdown's over, you could take your car studio out on the road and do like a Jerry Seinfeld interviewing people in the back of your car.
Yeah, that would be absolutely amazing.
That'd be great.
There's an idea for you.
Wow.
That'd be awesome,
Yeah, it's actually been really cool to see. It's not often you get a chance to kind of watch a podcast or listen to a podcast from episode one and watch how they've evolved. But it's been really good to be able to see that with you. You've hit the ground running. You're way better at now than I was when I was at that many episodes in. So yeah, keep killing it.
Oh, thank you. I think someone said to me, what's the secret getting guests? And I said, there's no secret. I said, prepare yourself for rejection. Like, I've been rejected from Jeff Jarrett, you know, people like that. And I've had some wrestlers, I won't name them, but asking me for money, you know, for them to come onto my show, which I won't pay guests. I'm trying to help promote your brand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, so It's one of them things. I do enjoy it. It really is great, like, talking to these people I've grown up watching. And, you know, it's a privilege to be able to speak to them. And like I said to you before, Mags and Paul, I've loved every interview I've done, but me Nick Aldis interview, that's the one for me. And me numbers as well, like audio and YouTube, it smashed me numbers. And got some great stuff, yeah, stories, especially the Bruce Pritchard situation. He gave me the scoop on that.
it was an outstanding interview, and like you said, you made him almost feel kind of at ease straight away. And Nick Aldis is a scholar and a gent, and I won't have a bad word said about that guy.
And it's great as well because he was a legit gent. I've actually asked him tonight. I said, "Do you mind if I email Mickey James if she would want to come on the show?" He said, "For it, James." He said, "I'm sure she'll come on if when she's got free time." So. Hopefully, yeah. But I emailed him to say, you know, thanks for coming on, he said, "No problem." He said to me, he said, "No problem, James." He said, "The NWA pod, because I think the NWA's got their own special podcast."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "The guys over there were speaking about it and they loved it. And I listened to it, and every one of them was saying, this interview is that good. You know, he's got stories out of Nick what we've never heard before. I don't know if it's a kinsmanship of them being both English or. He caught the champ on a good day, but this is the interview." And when I'm getting reviews like that off like fellow content creators, and it's nothing better when people say to me, especially fellow content creators, like saying, "You are doing such a good job," it means the world to me, because I'm still a baby in this. I think like 3 months maybe.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm just happy when people say that show wasn't terrible, Darren.
They never say that to me.
No, they just say, "When's Paul back?"
I've had some bad reviews. I've had some bad on Facebook. I thought Twitter was toxic. Well, you better get on Facebook.
Oh,
Facebook's just bitchy, isn't it?
Wrestling Facebook is horrific.
Yeah, and Reddit. Oh, someone in they're proper sensitive in Reddit. Because, like I said, that Nick Aldis interview, I posted it in the New Japan Reddit as well. And someone said to me, "He doesn't go to New Japan." And I was like, "He was IWGP Tag Team Champion. We actually spoke about it." "Oh, well, it doesn't matter because it was under a month." I'm like, it still fucking counts. the Facebook one was on like the Impact Wrestling. And the comments was like some really nasty remarks regarding Deonna Purrazzo, saying she's out of shape and things like that. I'm like, have you seen this lady? She's beautiful. So that was horrible. Then Ace Austin, someone said to me, "I'm surprised he didn't throw a card in your fucking face." I'm like, what? And then the next one was regarding Eric Young, and it was like, "Tell Eric Young I would beat his ass in a real fight." I'm like, okay.
Wow. Aren't fans dickheads?
It's crazy.
Wrestling fans are dickheads in general.
Oh, I can be a prick. Yeah.
Which one of us can't? But James, this is your first time on Badlands. So what we like to do with our debuting guests is find out who is on their Mount Rushmore of the greatest wrestlers. So Mr. Tully here can collate all the results and come up with the definitive Mount Rushmore. So who are the four guys and gals who make your picks, and a little bit of a reasoning why each one kind of makes the cut?
Yeah, this was a tough one because the first two popped in my head, possibly the first three, but the fourth one was always a tricky one. I'll be honest, the four people that should be on it is Hogan, Flair, Rock, Austin. That's the four who should be on it, but I want to pick my...
That's our four.
So number one for me, yeah, that's just no surprise. So my four, me number one, and he's my favorite wrestler of all time, is Bret Hitman Hart. I just love him. Growing up, so which I'll probably explain it on why we watch, but growing up in the 90s, like I was born in 89, so growing up watching wrestling in the mid 90s, I suppose New Generation era, it was him and Shawn. My kid brother was always a Shawn Michaels fan. I was always Bret, the Pink and Black Attack. He was just such a clean cut baby face, always obeyed by the rules and that. And I always loved it. And I actually missed his 97 run because, you know yourselves, like growing up in the UK, like to watch WWF, you needed Sky Sports and that, which I never had Sky Sports as a child. I used to just go tape collecting from car boot sales and markets or Blockbusters, wherever I could find them. And with the privilege of having the WWE Network, which is the greatest thing ever for wrestling. Last year, I made it my mission to watch every Raw of 1990, and I was not disappointed. Like, his heel run in 97 and his mic work, I was like, wow. I've heard how good it was, but to watch it every week, it was amazing. So Bret Hart, like, he's my favorite wrestler of all time. I consider him a better wrestler than Shawn Michaels, which is debatable. I put it this way, Mugs, right? All right, obviously, wrestling is to put yourself over, get yourself over as a star. It also means to help put your opponent over and make them a star. Bret Hart, right, made his brother Owen Hart, which obviously there's a bit of bias, it's his brother, but he made Owen a star. He made the 1-2-3 Kid a star on that episode of Raw when they had that great match on Monday Night. He made Stone Cold Steve Austin a star, the biggest star in the business. Because people say, oh, well, Austin 316 at King Green made him a star. I'm like, no, if you look at them pay-per-views that followed, he didn't really do much. It wasn't until Bret Hart came back at Survivor Series, they put on that great match at MSG, and then made him a superstar at WrestleMania. That's what made Stone Cold a star. He probably would have got there eventually, but believe me, Bret Hart sped it up.
Yeah, I totally
name
agree.
Name one person who Shawn Michaels made. I can't name one.
Diesel.
He buried Diesel at Mania, though, as well. When you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree with you in that he was very self-centred, but I think working with Shawn Michaels and being in that kind of group did make Kevin Nash a bigger star than it possibly would have been.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do. You do make sense, though. Bret Hart was a more giving wrestler than Shawn Michaels. And that's very interesting because on our Collator Mount Rushmore, the battle for the top four spots is kind of petering off. And the most interesting battle is the battle between Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels.
It is.
Well, I'm glad to give him some points.
Currently, and we don't know if you're going to give Shawn Michaels any points, but it doesn't sound like you're going to. So currently, we've got Shawn Michaels on 13 and Bret on 12. And you say it's closed off for the top four. That those two are hunting the top four down.
Mm. All right. So yeah, don't worry, I love Shawn Michaels. I do, but Bret is just for me. So he's between number one. Number, I guarantee this will be the first time this guy's been picked. Jeff Hardy.
Ooh, let's have a look. I don't think he's been picked, but I'm going to check it. Oh, he's been picked once.
Oh, cool. Ooh, it's not a pointless answer. Just... don't walk away with the 1,200 quid.
You do get a trophy at the end, though.
But yeah, Jeff Hardy for me, if it wasn't for that he had so many troubles, he could have been a lot bigger star than what he is. So like I said earlier, like towards the end of the 90s, I dropped off WWF because I never had Sky Sports. But then at the end of the 90s, beginning of the 2000s, Channel 4 started showing WWF. And one of the shows they showed was Royal Rumble 2000.
I think that was the only pay-per-view that they showed. I'm sure it was.
It might have been. I think there was a couple, but I know I got into trouble with Mae Young.
Mae Young flashed the babs and Channel 4 cut the deal.
Like that's the worst thing Channel 4 has ever seen.
you can put Euro Trash on.
I know.
I think... Oh, the good old days. but yeah, so at that event, there was the tag team tables match between the Hardy Boys and Dudley Boys. And this is the first time I saw the Hardy Boys. This is the first time I saw the Dudley Boys. I was blown away. I was like, oh my God, this match is so great. To be honest, I was more of a Matt Hardy fan back then. But as time carried on and the early 2000s is when I really got back into wrestling, Jeff Hardy, you could always tell Jeff Hardy was the Shawn Michaels of the two. People try to say to me, Matt Hardy's a bigger star. I'm like, no, don't be. No. Okay, yeah, in his own head he may be, but he'll always be behind Jeff. And, you know, and I think that, and that's when Jeff isn't trying. Jeff has just got that charisma. You don't know why you're drawn to it. You just are. He took his risks, and he's paid for it. And when he left in 03, I was so sad. I was like, oh man, I love Jeff. I went to TNA, then he came back in 06, and 06 for me was a really good year for wrestling because it was the first time I actually attended a WWE show, live show. It was in Nottingham, and Jeff Hardy was there. I think he was fighting for the Intercontinental title against John Morrison, and when he came out, I was 17 at the time, but I might as well have been 7 because he was my guy. And one of the other shows where I really got behind him was Royal Rumble. It might have been 08 against Randy Orton for the title, and they'd done the package before and things like that. And I was like, I really believe Jeff was going to win it that night, but he didn't. And then he was meant to win Money in the Bank at Mania 24. He got suspended over drugs, and I'm like, come on, Jeff. And then Armageddon in 2009, I think I've got this right. I might be wrong. I think it's 2009. It's the last Armageddon show they've ever done. And he was in the triple threat match with Triple H and Edge for the title. And when he hit that swanton, and it was like 1, 2, 3, I was bouncing over the room. And I'm 31. I've been watching wrestling since, you know, I can remember, nearly 30 years. And in my whole life, I've been a wrestling fan. That will always be my favourite WWE title win because I wanted it so much. And he won the world title a couple of times. Then he left, done the stuff in TNA. He's come back now. He's just won the IC Championships, which is good. But I would love for him to have one more run with a belt. And plus, I want him to bring back No More Words because that's my favourite wrestling theme song of all time.
I think if he can prove that to Vince that he's safe to kind of trust with the world title, Vince will put that title back on him in a heartbeat. You can tell he loves Jeff Hardy.
I've heard that. I've heard he's a big fan of Jeff. So hopefully it comes true. But yeah, he's my number two. So I suppose we get to me number three. It's got to be The Rock. What can you say? I mean, the man's going to become president one day.
Absolutely should. He absolutely should.
I need to find a bookmaker that will take that bet because it's guaranteed. Like in America, no offense to like American audiences, I love every one of you, but you know the presidency over there, it's like a reality show at this point. It ain't serious, and The Rock is going to become president. There is zero doubt in my mind. The Rock is going to become president, but besides all that crap, like his in-ring career, there's never been. There might have been better talkers, but for me, there's never been a better talk in the business. The put downs, you know, it doesn't matter what your name is, and all the things he came up with the term SmackDown. Mm-hmm. He came up with a show. What's gone on for 20 years? Is the name of it. Was he best in the ring? Was he, you know, Ricky Steamboat or Kenny Omega and all that crap? No, but it didn't matter. He didn't need to be. He was so entertaining. He had the audience in the palm of his hand just by raising an eyebrow. Yeah. And, you know, look at the numbers, okay? People like talk about ratings and the demos these days. Look at the numbers The Rock was getting at his height, you know? And people try to say to me, the Attitude Era was overrated. I'm like, fuck off. Is it? Maybe. But look at the numbers.
Look at the numbers he's getting now. Jesus.
Yeah. Over a decade out of business and is the highest paid movie star in the world.
Yeah. And it's great. It's great to see. Like I said, we all love wrestling. And when a wrestler tries to make it in the rest of the world, like movies and that, it feels like it's a victory for the wrestling industry and wrestling fans because there are guys. Same with John Cena. I love John Cena, and I'm happy he's doing great work in movies, and he's going to be in the new Suicide Squad movie, which will be fun. So, but The Rock, like from his epic trilogy with Stone Cold, his feuds with Triple H, there's so many, and his match against Hogan at Mania 19. That's probably in my top five favorite matches of all.
Yeah, me too.
Time.
It's my second favorite WrestleMania moment ever.
Yeah, I think Cody Rhodes has actually said that is his favorite wrestling match of all time.
Mm-hmm. It was electrifying, and that's to steal a catchphrase from The Rock. It was actually amazing. Electrifying. Yeah. So
that amazes us about The Rock is that if you look at the stats on the Mount Rushmore, and look at our top 20 picks, he's wrestled the fewest matches by far. He's the only one on that top 20 who's wrestled under 1,000 matches in his career.
Wow.
And yet he's our second pick. So he achieved so much in a relatively short time compared to everyone else.
Because his career wasn't that long, really. It was, at the peak, probably about 3 years, but overall probably about maybe 6 years as an actual wrestler.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Like, sometimes there's some wrestlers using it for such a long time, and people's like, oh, they deserve the belt and things like that. But I'm like, do they? And when you look at The Rock and the impact he made in such a short time, you know, it doesn't matter how long you hold the belt. I think you brought up it the other day, Mags. Steve Austin, like, he had a real short run with the belt, but what he'd done with the belt during his time was amazing.
Yeah, it's the age old discussion about. I think it was. It started with a fan saying how bad it was that Keith Lee got dropped the title, the NXT title, after only about 40 odd days. But it's the age old adage that the chase is much more entertaining than the face winning the belt, and that's why Austin had 6 runs with the title. 5 as a face, which were all, I think the longest one was maybe 90 days, but his actual longest run, which was nearly twice that, was when he was a heel, because that's what people want. They want the story of the face overcoming the odds, not the face being the best wrestler in the world and sat on the top of the tree, because that gets boring. It's you want to see the face overcome the baddies.
Yeah. Particularly in the modern era with modern fans. If a face is a champion for 3 days, it's being rammed down your throat.
Yeah. I mean, they said that with Roman being back after one night, and they said he was being rammed down his throat.
Yeah.
So go on, Jamie.
I wish 4th pick. This is the toughest one. I had so many names floating around in my head, and it was like, who do I go for? And I am torn between so many. Oh, I'm going to give it to him. Randy Orton.
Oh, wow. Ooh. Didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I'm guessing that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
On SummerSlam, you'll never see it coming.
Another one I need to check. Yeah, he has had one more pick previously. So you're second with Randy Orton.
Oh, so close again. But you've been a great guest then.
I was going to pick it. The three I was torn between was him, Shawn Michaels, and AJ Styles, but Orton just clinched it for me. And even though it sounded like I was talking shit about Shawn Michaels earlier, which I probably was, I still love Shawn Michaels. But Randy Orton for me, I've just because I would say, like, I really got, like, I've always been a fan of wrestling, but watching it as it was happening, I got really into it in the early 2000s, and from that point on, basically. Like, before then, it was just literally catching what tapes I could get. And I watched him debut, like, in a match against Hardcore Holly, and he was, like, this young 22-year-old kid. He was trying to put the moves on Stacy Keibler, which he was living everyone's fantasies. And it was just watching him grow, and then he got injured, and then they brought him back as just this cocky young heel, and being put in with Evolution, which you can picture yourselves like, oh my god, can you imagine going around partying with like Ric Flair? and I'm watching it, and it was great. I'm in the minority when I say I was a fan of his run as the babyface when he left Evolution. I really enjoyed it because him being this young star got kicked out of the group, and I understand why they let him drop the title, because he wasn't that professional backstage. It sounds weird to say he was still a kid at 24, even though I got married at like 23. But in the wrestling world, that is quite young. And always been a fan of him, and like, he's a face and a heel. And like, people say he's put on good matches, and I'm like, yeah, he's put on plenty of good matches. Just look for him. One of my favourite moments I loved was at the 2004 Survivor Series, where it was Team Orton against Team Triple H. And when he hit that RKO on Triple H from a pedigree, I popped really hard for it. And he was always there. He's been in the main event for like 20 years, like there or thereabouts. How many people could, you know, actually say that. And then lately, especially now with Edge, he started to do some of the best work of his career. And I don't know, I don't think you was a fan of it, but the greatest wrestling match ever at Backlash, I absolutely love that match. I thought it was such a great match. And now he's in the title scene again now with McIntyre, who's another one of my big favorites. And yeah, and like I said, I managed to watch him live at Nottingham, and when he came out, he was still coming out to Ben in My Light, and as he's coming out posing, I'm there in the audience, I'm posing. I'm 17 years old at the time, but yeah, I think Orton just nudges it to me, and it looks like that he's got at least another 5 years in the business. So it'd be interesting to see what he does. And the man's a 13-time world champion. So, and he's more of a new pick for a new school wrestler, I suppose. But yeah, I'm going to give it to Orton. He's my fourth choice.
Yeah, it's a solid pick. I think the only reasons, well, I can think of two reasons maybe why Orton doesn't get picked as often is one, he's still active, and we found that a lot of wrestlers who are still active kind of get overlooked. And two, there's been periods in his career where he's literally has just phoned it in. He could potentially be the very best wrestler that there's ever been, because when he's into a storyline or when he's into a like a feud, you can tell he's so much better. He kind of turns the dial up, but when he's kind of not invested, he you can tell there's periods where he just doesn't give 100%, and he just kind of floats through the storyline. I think if he showed that kind of passion all the way through his career, I think he'd be up there with the absolute greats.
Yeah. And another thing you do as well, some people think it's an easy task, but I don't think it is. It's actually trying to eclipse your family, and he's well and truly done that over Bob Orton. He's eclipsed his father and his grandfather. So, and that's another thing. So, like I said, some people try to say it's easy. I'm thinking, okay, look at the likes of David Sammartino and Eric Watts and tell them that it was easy. And many others. Like, I was a fan of Ted DiBiase Jr. And he got nowhere near to what his father was. So it's not as easy as what people think to, you know, being part of a wrestling family.
Yeah, and I mean, look at one of the biggest stars in the world today, Cody. He's still kind of struggling to kind of break out from the huge shadow left by our Duster. And that guy's gone and basically formed a company and kind of put up a challenge against AEW. And he's still thought of in a lot of circles as the son of a plumber. So, yeah, that kind of legacy can be a weight on a lot of people, but Randy has definitely kind of like far surpassed everything that his dad achieved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, great. They're my four picks.
And I think you're right, Mags. We've only got one fully active. We've got two fully active wrestlers in our top 20, and that's Dust Jericho and Omega. And unless you're retired or semi-retired, you don't attract a lot of votes in this game. No. So I think you're right. Once Orton retires, we'll start seeing him shoot up here. If we're still cracking on with this,
we will be. Of course, we will. So let's get into this main topic. The topic that James was very not, well, definitely not pleased about having when he told me to fuck off. The topic of the worst wrestling pay-per-view matches. So that's literally any match from any pay-per-view that just was a massive turd in the punch bowl, or in Paul's case, a full pay-per-view that ended up being a turd in the punch bowl.
I'm interested to see what pay-per-view.
Before we start, what pay-per-views did you pick, Paul?
What pay-per-views did I pick? Well, there's a story behind this. I was going to be quite clever about it. So kind of without going into my full story, it won't make sense. But I was going to pick WrestleMania 33. But there was a reason behind it. if we do the topic again, I'll go into because obviously it wasn't the worst pay-per-view. It wasn't anywhere near the worst pay-per-view.
So
I was basically just gonna shit on fans for about 10 minutes and have a bit of fun.
So James, that might be a bit of a hint for your topic afterwards to pick the worst pay-per-view just to get that story out of Paul.
The other one was the King of the Ring Billy Gunn one.
Oh. That actually made me shudder.
Yeah. That was just a terrible King of the Ring tournament.
The best thing about that was the promo that The Rock did a couple of weeks after, where about Billy pissing himself and the God promo. Such a funny promo. So, James, let's go to you for your first worst wrestling pay-per-view match.
I recently discovered this one about a month ago. When I was reviewing the show, and I was like, this match is fucking terrible. They changed the rules on the fly, and it was so boring and crap, and it made no sense. The commentary was awful and everything. It was at Uncensored 99, and it was a steel cage match between Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan.
Okay.
It was terrible. It was a first blood steel cage match, and before the match, so the stipulations of the match, Ric Flair was like the commissioner or the president of WCW, and Hogan was the world champion. So basically, if Flair won, he'd become champion. He'll still be president or whatever it was. If Hogan won, Flair be out of WCW forever. So before the match started, Ric Flair went to Charles Robinson, whatever happens, I don't want this match being stopped over a nosebleed. I want this to be a war and a battle. So, okay. And as the match went on, so they said, right, pinfalls and submissions count. So Hulk Hogan had him, like, banged to rights to pin him. Like, it was 1-2, Flair was still down. But the referee counted 1-2, and then he stopped. I'm like, why has he stopped? And he just like, I thought pinfalls count. Then he said, no, pinfalls don't count. Then Hogan busted Flair rope in. I'm like, right, Hogan's won by first blood. Nope, it's only a scratch, even though he had the crimson mask. Then Flair busted Hogan open. The match still continued in this steel cage first blood match. Then I realized escaping the cage wasn't included. then Hogan had flared another pinfall attempt, and the referee said, nope, no pins, no pins. And then, what? I forgot the ending now, it was that bad. I forgot if, I'm sure Flair beat Hogan by submission or by pin. It was definitely one of the time, and they counted it. What the fuck?
That was just typical WCW booking at that time, though.
Was this during the period Hogan was just making the rules up in matches?
Yeah, pretty much.
It was just a complete and not a mess. And I love Hogan, and I love Flair. I did not love this match. It was terrible, and it might not even be the worst match in the world, but with the two people involved and the constant rule changes and all things like that, I had to put it up the list because it was very fresh in the memory. That's definitely that's one of the worst matches I've seen.
it's a very fair pick. I think a lot of people kind of get upset that Flair and Hogan didn't happen whilst they were both in the prime in WWF. And when you see the matches that they did have, you can kind of tell why they just didn't have a lot of in-ring chemistry between the two.
No. But, it was pretty terrible.
Too much blonde as well, isn't it?
Flair's white. Flair's been white since he was about 17.
Ric Flair's at a massive disadvantage in a first blood match, isn't he? Because he's made of paper.
You just look at him and he'd bleed. it's a great first pick to start this terrible pair of Mount Rushmores. Paul, is it you to go first this week or is it me? I can't
I thought it was
remember.
You
it but, may be me. Yeah, if it's me, it's me. Now, I've got two horrific matches. I'm going to go with the one that you guys probably know the best. I'm going with Over the Limit 2012. I'm going for John Cena versus John Laurinaitis. Now, if you remember Over the Limit 2012, this was the card that had the outstanding match of the year candidate, Punk versus Daniel Bryan for the title. But that was in the middle of the card. And this match was in the main event. Cena taking on People Power John Laurinaitis, where Johnny Ace's job was on the line. I think it was on the line for like the fourth time in last 6 months. So the stipulation was very, very worn out. Going into the build-up to this match, John Laurinaitis fired the Big Show after Big Show made fun of his voice. Now, remember that little detail because that'll be important a little bit later. But the website 411mania.com, I've got a theory going around called the Kevin Dunn theory of sports entertainment inertia. Right, so that's in any situation where the WWE main event, which around this time always consisted of John Cena, the outcome that involves the least amount of change will occur. So, for example, in this one, if Johnny Ace loses, he'd get fired. And if anyone else interfered, they'd also be fired. You can safely assume that Johnny Ace is going to win, since it's physically incomprehensible that who he's facing, Cena, he'll be obviously assisted by someone who cannot be fired. Now, remember that little detail I gave you earlier. So you can basically, anyone with a set of working eyes could see what was coming, that John Laurinaitis was definitely going to win this match. And John Laurinaitis did win this match. But we got 17 minutes of action. And I mean action in the very loosest sense of the word. Big Johnny Ace tried to escape the ring early, but he was caught by Cena. Cena quickly sets him up for the attitude adjustment, then changes his mind and does an airplane spin, which coming to the end of the match, Cena might have regretted not just finishing the match early. Johnny Ace escapes to the floor where Cena grabs the ring bell and dings it right in his ear. Cena then stops to do a little bit of commentary. There's magically two spare chairs there, so he sits John Laurinaitis in the chair next to him. The only kind of entertaining bit of the actual match was when Cena cast Johnny in the role of Booker T, and Johnny was shouting five time. Then once we got back in the ring, we had Cena locking in the STFU for 10 seconds at a time, allowing Laurinaitis to survive, kind of like trying to punish him, I suppose. Cena thought that John Laurinaitis looked like he needed a bit of a drink, and sprayed him with some water and a fire extinguisher. Johnny tries to run again, and he slammed Cena's arm on the barricade, which had been previously injured by Brock at Extreme Rules when he was locked in the Kimura. Johnny starts beating Cena up with a chair, but Cena quickly takes this chair away from him and does the "you can't see me" thing with the actual chair. Johnny actually gets some offense in when it's a low blow and runs off, but this match has no count out, so I don't know why he ran off. And Cena just stood in the middle of the ring and waited for him. Big Show turns back up. Now, remember Big Show being fired not a few days earlier. Turns back up and drags Laurinaitis to the ring, throws him to Cena, and then knocks Cena out to the shock of no one. Johnny Ace rolls up Cena for the win at 17 minutes and 4 seconds. So my first pick is Cena versus Johnny Ace from Over the Limit 2012.
Yep, great choice.
Great in the incredibly loosest sense of the word.
A deserving choice.
Yeah,
I did really enjoy John Laurinaitis as a GM. I think you made it onto our Mount Rushmore when we did authority figures.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah,
it was good in that kind of dickhead heel role. But
he was.
the kind of being fired if he didn't win trope got boring very quickly.
Yeah. He was a bit David Brent-ish. A bit of a try-hard.
Yeah, yeah. I get what you mean. I assume you're not going to veto that then, Paul?
No, I'm not going to veto it. It's a fine pick.
Okay. James, back to you for your second pick.
Second pick. And I watched this today to see how everyone it was Char Melfi, Jenna Maraska.
it's my other main pick. It's fucking brutally horrific.
It was so bad. And Charmel, like, lovely woman, and you know, she was great being Queen Charmel during the King Book of Reign, which is so underrated. I love that world title reign by Booker. And it was so bad that, you know, I got an idea of Jenna Mraskaris. Okay, so
she won Survivor.
I remember that show years ago. It used to be a fun show. I know it went on in America quite a long time. Like, we had like a couple of seasons of it in the early 2000s, but yeah, she couldn't even slap right. And, you know, how hard is it to slap? So she was trying to slap her. It was like when she tried to slap her, it was like she was slapping further away than what her body actually was. It was so bad. And you know how I feel about Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez, right? I put no value in their opinion at all. But I think Alvarez actually said this match was actually -5 stars.
Yeah, it's off the Botchamania intro. This is that match, the -5 stars.
Right. So for the first time ever, Hell Was Frozen Over, I will agree with Brian Alvarez. So this terrible, and Victory Road, it must have a bit of a jinx on it because my other choice will be coming up later on. But yeah, this match was so bad. So yeah, Charmel against Jenna Maraska.
Yeah, I had this as one of my other picks. It's horrific from the very second the match not even starts, when the people come down. For some reason, they've both got a trainer, Charmel, who the ring announcer actually called Charpel. She had Sojo Ball, who was not a good wrestler in her own right, and she got an entrance before Charmel did. And then before Jenna Maraska came out, her trainer, Awesome Kong, got an entrance. Yeah, Jenna Maraska was... she may be the very worst wrestler that's ever lived. It was so horrific. And she tried to kind of look sexy when she was climbing through the ring, and it looked like she tripped over the bottom rope. She just had no clue what they were doing. The action was so... the only way I could describe it is hammy. You know, when you're having a play fight with your mates as a kid, and you'll jump to, like, clothesline someone, or you'll jump to give someone, like, a slap or a punch. Everything had a little jump in it. It was really, really weird. And I think Charpel, as she's now known, I think she kind of misunderstood what the match was about, because she came out in an evening dress and wrestled the match in that same evening dress. It was really, really weird. Luckily, it was only, 11 minutes, I think, or so. So the match wasn't that long. But I've never heard a TNA crowd shout, "This is boring," in my life, and that crowd were going nuts. I also didn't understand the kind of stakes behind the match, because both of them were valets for Main Event Mafia. There was no kind of like beef between the two girls. There was just literally no reason to be in the match. But the end came when Sojo Bolt tried to get involved. She got knocked off the ring by Charpel by accident. I think Kong was meant to catch her, but she didn't. So Sojo just slammed into the railings. Kong knocks Charmel out. Jenna gets the pin. And then the end was probably the best bit, was when Jenna wanted Kong to lift her up onto her shoulder. And Kong was like, okay, yeah, I don't really want to do this. And then Jenna starts like berating her for doing it, for doing it wrong. And then she slaps Kong, and Kong just wrecks her, absolutely just lays her out, big splash, and it's like she's a dead body. She was absolutely knackered. But yeah, that would have been my second pick. Luckily, I've got plenty more to go at, but yeah, what a horrific match that was.
I don't know that match, I'm afraid, so I'm going to have to go check it out.
Don't, Paul.
It doesn't
don't
sound like I want to, but...
Don't subject yourself to it.
No, shall I go next?
Well, yeah, seeing as it's your turn.
It's my turn, yeah. Lucky, I've got a few picks as well, because you mentioned Victory Road there. I think we've got the same pick, and I'm going to leave that one to you, James. So I'm going to go to WrestleMania 27. I'm going to go for a horrific match. That was kind of the first thing I thought of when this topic came up, and I realized what the actual topic was. And I'm going for Michael Cole versus Jerry the King Lawler.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Michael Cole, of course, being trained by Jack Swagger. And Stone Cold Steve Austin was the special guest referee or enforcer, or I'm not even sure what Stone Cold Steve Austin was. I don't think he knew what he was. He looked thoroughly uninterested throughout, apart from when he got to stunner people. This came about because Michael Cole was a thoroughly unentertaining heel commentator, and I don't hate Michael Cole. I love Michael Cole. I think Michael Cole's a fantastic commentator when he's a commentator. And I think we've seen that when he gets to do kind of the satellite shows like the Cruiserweight Classic and the UK tournament and stuff like that. Basically, when he doesn't have Vince McMahon in his ear. But when I really couldn't abide Michael Cole the heel. So yeah, Michael Cole in his heel phase obviously was. He used to spend the majority of the shows slated in the action, being incredibly rude to JR and the King, and he cost the King a world title match. I've forgotten who the match was against, but Michael Cole cost the King. Yes. Against the Miz, yeah, of course.
Yeah, a lot of match, I think.
Yeah. So Michael Cole cost him a match. So a few months down the line. The King got his chance at revenge at WrestleMania. Now, one of the things I hate about this is I love Jerry the King Lawler. I think he was a fantastic wrestler. And I believe this is his only WrestleMania match that he's had, or up to that point, it was his only WrestleMania match he's had. And I think he deserved a lot better than Michael Cole. just everything about him, Michael Cole just looked utterly ridiculous. He looked like a vegan Rick Steiner in his orange.
Singlet was horrific.
His orange singlet and his, what are those things called that go on your ears? Are they earmuffs?
The headsets.
The headset.
For like rugby, aren't they?
Terrible. Michael Cole got most of the offense in the match.
Wasn't he trained as well? But he was taking like lessons from Jack Swagger, I think.
He's taking lessons from Jack Swagger. Michael Cole's given an interview where he said he got sent for 1 month of training at the Performance Center, or what was the Performance Center back then? One month. and he said he'd hit the gym for 6 months, but realized he must have been doing it wrong. When he saw how he looked in the singlet. It's just terrible. I mean, I really don't like it when I don't like it when commentators kind of make the show about them and kind of talk too much about themselves and all the action. So again, a reason I didn't like this. And Michael Cole himself has said that it got him a lot of heat backstage with a great deal of the wrestlers because the segment, and this is the worst part, the whole segment start to finish lasted 35 minutes. So 35 minutes of WrestleMania was taken up with Michael Cole versus Jerry the King Lawler. which ended with Jerry Lawler locking in the ankle lock on Michael Cole, Stone Cold amusingly refusing to acknowledge the tap. So Michael Cole had to take the pain for a bit longer. Eventually, he accepted the tap. Jerry the King Lawler won, only for the anonymous Raw general manager to overturn the result due to biased officiating. The only redeeming feature of this whole debacle was Stone Cold Steve Austin almost running Jack Swagger over on his quad bike. And obviously the obligatory annual Stone Cold stunners that were dished out. But that this was 35 minutes of a WrestleMania. They must have been horrendous to be in the arena.
Yeah. I cannot fault that pick. I so want to beat on you because it's fun. But I can't take that match off. That was horrific. That's staying on.
It has stood the test of time, though, because I don't know if you remember Michael Cole's, was it the coal mine that you used to commentate from? Obviously, that's perfect for coronavirus these days. he was ahead of the game.
It's a solid pick, and it's definitely staying on our Mount Rushmore. Yeah, God, that's... Why is wrestling so crap sometimes? The biggest show in the wrestling calendar, and that's what we get, Michael Cole versus Jerry Lawler.
Yeah. You know what? When researching this, I had a lot of picks that I watched and then I kind of saw like redeemable qualities. Actually, that bit's quite funny and I can see why this happened this way. And actually, if this segment had been 15 minutes, you might have thought, actually, I can see why that's there. It's in between the big CM Punk match and the Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels, so a little palate cleanser. But it's just the time it took.
Yeah. I mean, if it were a 5, 10, 15 minute match, something like that, you'd been happy. But 35 goddamn minutes.
It's unreal.
It's unreal. James, save us with your third pick.
Yeah. Paul mentioned it earlier. Victory Road, Jeff Hardy versus Sting. I don't know if this is just terrible to watch or just sad to watch. Sting and Jeff Hardy, like I said, Jeff Hardy is my number two guy of all time. Sting is right up there for me. He's definitely in my top 10. It was weird because a few days beforehand at Impact, on the episode of Impact, they had a match for the title where Sting won and this was the rematch. Mm-hmm. And I didn't notice it the first time round. I thought they had that match. I thought, obviously, this is going to be a longer match and things like that. But then it happened and Jeff Hardy was stumbling everywhere. And, you know, it was finished within seconds. And I thought, what just happened? You start seeing the reports online. Jeff was should not have been there. In the arena, never mind the match. Bischoff tries to blame someone else. Oh, I didn't see him go by. I thought, no, Bischoff, it's your fucking job. You should have sorted it out. Because he's always very quick to pass the buck to other people when it's his fault. Don't get me wrong, it's fully Jeff Hardy's fault. But I'm like, you shouldn't let him get to the ring. They said that he walked by him. I'm like, how did Jeff Hardy walk by him in the state he was in? Mm-hmm. And... it was just fucking sad to watch. Like I said, Jeff Hardy's my number two guy. And see this happen, I was like, what happened? And it took it. I know he's had a couple of problems since, but I don't think anything to this level. And like it took him a long time to shake this tag off, a long time. And I think so many people in the locker room, when they done them segments on Impact, when he was praying for forgiveness from the locker room, apparently a lot of that was legit. Like people still didn't trust him after what happened. Mm-hmm. And that, and you can't help but say it is a terrible match, because it was like, it was literally a couple of punches, kicks if that, and then Sting forcing him to Scorpion Death Drop just to get, you know, just to pin. And even then, like, where Jeff was so out of it, he was still trying to kick out of it. But Sting just gripped him tight and like, let's get this shit over. And one of the other sad things as well, like, there's a couple of sad things. Jeff Hardy's always said that Sting was one of his childhood heroes. So he said, like, you know, the fact he was in that condition, like wrestling with his childhood hero, made him depressed. But also, when Sting was going up the ramp, and I forgot what the fans were saying to him, this is bullshit, or things like that, or bullshit. Yeah. And Sting said, I agree. It has to be on there. And, you know, I'm glad that Jeff has come out a better person over it. Obviously, he's had a couple of, you know, still had a couple of troubles since, but I think this is probably the lowest low he was ever at. Thankfully, I'm hoping, it looks like he's staying clean now. And like I said, we mentioned it earlier, it'd be nice to see him have the title run. But yeah, this has to be on it.
Definitely. Like I said, it was going to be one of my picks. Looking into it now, it's quite interesting. Sting was very good to him after that event, and has always forgiven him for it, and kind of been good to him after, and not said a bad word about it. But interestingly, Sting said that that Jeff Hardy had visibly deteriorated throughout the night. And as you said, you have to wonder who the hell allowed him to go out there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think TNA need to take a massive amount of the blame for whatever happened there, because they signed Jeff Hardy knowing he was an addict at that time. You know, he'd been released from WWE. He was when they signed him, he was awaiting the sentencing for possession, which as you know, he went to prison for 10 days. So they can't have had any sort of support network in that company or safeguarding of Jeff Hardy to have allowed it to got to the point where he went out to that match.
It's sad. And both Eric and Bruce have kind of covered it on their podcast and said ultimately that they both passed the buck on to it being Dixie's fault. Dixie was a huge supporter of Jeff and wanted Jeff in the main event. I think Bruce said a couple of times that Jeff would just go missing in the arena, and they'd find him like in dark little corners, absolutely out of his head, on whatever drink or drugs, whatever his poison of choice was at that time. It was sad that this aired on live pay per view. You could see the kind of the real demons that guy was battling, basically in front of your eyes, and there's not much as a fan that you could really do about it. It was really hard. It's hard to watch more than anything, I think, rather than being a terrible match. It's just hard to watch someone in that state, in that kind of hurt, basically being in a wrestling match. Yeah, horrible.
It's horrible to watch. It's a car crash.
Yeah.
But it was great that came out of it. Like James said, Jeff Hardy's more or less kind of clean now. He certainly doesn't appear to be an addict now. And he said himself that was an epiphany moment watching that back. He rebuilt his career and back in WWE now. And as you said, I think he's a champion at the moment, isn't he?
Intercontinental champion.
That's fantastic to see.
Yeah, it is. And to be fair to Jeff, he's got issues. Yeah, he's definitely got demons. This is something he's going to be probably fighting for the rest of his life. But the fact that he's still able to kind of get up every time he falls is tantamount to the guy. He's hopefully he'll get to that point where he kicks these issues for good.
I apologize really for that. I said he's not an addict. Obviously, I appreciate that you do never stop being an addict. So I apologize for that.
No, it wasn't. This show has gone really downhill now. Terrible pick, James. If only I could veto the guess, I would veto that pick. No, it absolutely deserves to be on there. Let's line it up a little bit with my pick. Well, I say line it up. It's not going to lie. It will be a very little bit. It's one that I actually did mention on the Rick and Clive Wrestling Show, and I think the reason I'm going to bring it back up now is because it deserves more love just because of how awful it was. So I'm going to go with from WrestleMania 5, the Bushwhackers versus the Fabulous Rougeau Brothers. Now, James, we spoke on your podcast about WrestleMania 6, and I think it was the Bushwhackers versus the Body Donners, maybe, back then. And we talked about how there was very little wrestling, and it was literally just a lot of pausing and then maybe 2 or 3 minutes of action. Pretty much the same in this, probably less wrestling, to be fair. So on the way to the ring, Jesse Ventura, who back then was absolutely comedy gold as a commentator, he straight out accused the Bushwhackers of being on the juice, which was probably, to be fair, wasn't far from the truth. So then we had Luke and Butch storming the ring, doing that that arm waving bollocks that they were famous for. The Rougeaus enter the ring, and they instantly get thrown into Jimmy Hart, so they all pile out. So when the match actually does start, it's literally just the typical kind of heels hitting each other accidentally, distracting the ref. That kind of like mid-90s wrestling style. Jesse then comes up with another cheeky quip when he says he's not actually seen a wrestling move yet, and to actually be fair, there wasn't really any. But the reason why I want to bring this match up is because I remember watching this as a kid, and then when I watched it back, there's something that I didn't notice until I watched it, and I had to rewind and replay. I even brought in Mrs. Mags to confirm that I saw what I thought I saw. Now, Ray Rougeau picks up Luke Bushwhacker for a scoop slam. And obviously, as wrestling fans, we now know that these guys are working together. If Luke tried to sandbag, there's no way Ray Rougeau's picking him up. So Luke obviously uses his own body weight to kind of push up. And he puts his hand on Ray Rougeau's dick. There's no other way to say it. He puts his hand on his dick. Now, you could actually think, oh, yeah, he's misplaced. He should have put it on the thigh. But he grabs it, gives it a little tickle and a rub. It's really, really, really weird. Now, I implore you, go back after recording this and go and watch this particular match. It's so weird. It gives him a little bit of a hand job in a match. Anyway... but fortunately, that was quite near the end of the match. Butch picks up Luke for that battering ram move that they did on Ray. They did a double stomach breaker, and Luke gets the pin, even though Jacques did break the pin and they kicked out. I think it was more a mercy referee decision than anything. But yeah, I'm putting that forward just because it was a live hand job from Luke Bushwhacker to Ray Rougeau.
Unbelievable pick. But obviously the Bushwhackers do have a vote on our overall Mount Rushmore.
So does Captain Lou Albano. So
oh yeah. Well, yeah.
The Rougeau brothers don't, unfortunately. But there's still time.
Wow. Is it staying on, Paul?
No, I'm gonna leave it on.
And you need to check it out, honestly. It's honestly surreal that you could see. And the camera zooms in. It's not like it's like you see it in the background. Your camera actually zooms in and you can see him tickling Ray's meat and two veg. Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. So let's go to you, James, for your final pick.
There's a few I was thinking, and there's some what's really bad, but you still find them entertaining. Mm-hmm. As terrible as the Kendall from Hell match is, I oddly find it amusing of how terrible it is.
You have no boss man besmirching on this podcast. This is a boss man loving zone.
You can't put any boss man match in. Oh. Didn't you send him the rules?
It's amusing. And I might have an announcement regarding that match through the week. So fingers crossed.
Oh, wow.
Well, obviously, I'm not going to be interviewing the boss man, so...
he's interviewing the Rottweilers.
Yeah. I think... Now, this pay-per-view gets shitted on a lot. I actually like this pay-per-view. And that's WrestleMania 9. I actually like the pay-per-view because I just find the aesthetic of the Caesar's Palace, even though it's like a car park, I found it really nice to look at. It's going to have to be The Undertaker v. Giant Gonzalez. Where do I start? Good entrance by Taker. Great entrance. with the vulture and all things that. Love that. The Giant Gonzalez, though, what was he wearing?
I don't know what it is.
The parts of it that are head are so weird.
He literally had painted on... He had a painted on ass. And at the front, you know, it was just nothing. I'm not expecting them to draw
they had glued on
a big
hair
dick
in
like,
the
you know, Dr. Manhattan style. It was like, so getting over that to begin with, like, you know, the aesthetic of the Giant Gonzalez. I'll tell you what it reminded me of. Have you ever seen Dogma? Movie. Alan Rickman plays the Archangel and he takes his trousers down. There's like nothing there.
like an action man.
Like a kendo or something. Like action man. So that's what the Giant Gonzalez was like. So getting over that, you know, I think what made me laugh in like a later match, they actually like, I think you mentioned it, they actually decided to give him like fair covered tights to go over that section. So instead, instead of it being clean, well, it was just like a load of pubes.
Manscaped.com.
Exactly. So after like looking at Giant Gonzalez, I like he's running at the Royal Rumble. It was like, you know, this big guy was like nearly 8 foot tall, like stuck towering over the Undertaker. You know, it was pretty impressive to look at. But yeah, then the bell rang, as Bruce Richards would say. But oh, it was so bad. And, you know, I mean, Undertaker matches during them days wasn't nothing like what he'd done later on in life. But the Giant Gonzalez, people say the Great Khali was bad, which he is, but Giant Gonzalez couldn't actually hit a move. And the end of the match was so weird, like just basically like getting a thing of chloroform like on a rag to knock the Taker out. And Macho Man selling it. Ooh, can you smell that? I'm like, no, Macho. I can't smell it.
It smells like someone's laid a turd in the ring.
Yeah, I love Savage as well, but there was no saving this. And whenever you see The Undertaker's, like, you know, highlight packages for his WrestleMania, you don't very often see this match get shown. And for good reason, it was so terrible. And you know, I know you mentioned the Bushwhackers Rouges, which I think has actually been voted the worst WrestleMania match of all time. I would probably put a claim, in fact this is probably number two. So yeah, I would say my final pick would be this match because it was just terrible.
Yeah, Giant Gonzalez has been haunting me recently. I recorded a podcast with Sam and Powell. And we were talking about War Games, and he's actually in one of the War Games matches. Well, he's not in the match. He comes out to carry Brian Pillman out of the War Games match. Yeah,
that's right. I saw that.
Yeah. It must be just because of the spectacle of having someone near enough 8 foot in the ring that he got work as a wrestler, because he was god-awful.
Yeah. I know... because I think he used to be a basketball player. He was he used to be a basketball player in Argentina, or he's from Argentina, one of the two.
Yeah.
And they said by the time he got into wrestling, like, his knees was like completely gone. And so, you know, I mean, that might have something to do with it, but he didn't play near a wrestling ring. And yeah, it was just terrible. But God, I think he's passed away, so God bless him. But yeah, not a great match.
No, it's a horrific pick, and well worthy being on a Mount Rushmore of the worst pay-per-view matches.
Paul, the streak that.
Yeah, it's the only disqualification win that he's got, I think, on his streak.
Yeah.
That's horrific. That could have ended the streak. Just think if that was the match that ended the streak. Well, it technically wasn't much of a streak then, but that could have been potentially the one soiling stain on the streak.
Yeah.
Yeah, DQ with.
So, Paul, on to you to potentially round off our Mount Rushmore.
Okay, you're vetoing this one anyway, because I think we strongly disagree on this match. I know you're a fan of it, and I'm really not.
It better not be Patterson versus Briscoe.
No, I love Patterson and Briscoe.
Oh, good, thank God for that.
Yeah, one of my favorite moments ever is when is it Briscoe pins Patterson when he's asleep, mm-hmm. and he celebrates really quietly.
And he's like,
I've actually got a bit of news regarding Briscoe.
Look at James coming on our show, dropping news as an exclusives.
I might be actually not interviewing him, but you know his son, Wes Briscoe.
Yeah. All right.
I think he's coming onto the show because he's rather his wife or his partner, Red Velvet. She's been in AEW lately on AEW Dark, and I think the two of I've messaged them and they want to come on. So I think the two of them might be coming onto the show like this week or next week. It'd be interesting. It will be interesting, like being the son of like a legendary guy like Jerry and going through developmental and not working out and then like going to Impact in that Aces and Eight angle. So it'd be interesting. So yeah, I thought I'd just share that with you now because we're talking about the risk.
Yeah, that sounds like it'll be a fun interview.
Definitely. Perfect segue there. I don't think you'll be interviewing either of these two guys. Not yet, anyway. I hope you do. But I'm going for Shawn Michaels versus Hulk Hogan at SummerSlam 2005.
I've got it as a pick.
You've got it as a pick? I thought you liked this match. I thought you were a fan of Michaels' antics.
I'll read off the opening part that I put for my research.
Go on,
I put, technically, this wasn't an awful match. And in truth, as a fan, it was highly entertaining. Seeing HBK oversell the offense of Hogan to the point of parody is hilarious. But what makes it the worst match is that it's a clash of the two biggest egos and the two biggest politickers in wrestling.
Well,
yeah.
I agree with that. I've gone for a slightly different angle on it. I think it's a wasted match. I think there's glimpses in that match of how good it could have been. Because there are points in that match where it is actually quite a decent match. But for me, the antics of Shawn Michaels throughout are just an embarrassment. And I watch it thinking, if I was sat here as someone who was new to wrestling, and this was the first match they watch, and given Hulk Hogan was in it, and people know Shawn Michaels as well, it could have potentially drawn people to watch it. If they'd have seen that, they would have been laughing at me.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just looked so ridiculous, so stupid. Like you said, it did go beyond parody. I don't find it enjoyable to watch myself. I think it's pretty shitty and pretty unprofessional, regardless of how shitty and unprofessional Hulk Hogan's been over his career. I believe it occurred because they were due to have. And you can correct me on this, Max, I know you're more familiar with it, but I think they would need to have three face versus face matches culminating in a steel cage.
Yep.
And then somewhere along the line, it got changed. It got changed that Shawn Michaels would be the heel. Which, let's face it, Shawn Michaels is a better heel than the face anyway. And going up against Hulk Hogan, that makes sense. And then obviously, I think the real kicker for Shawn Michaels was that Hogan expressed that he only wanted it to be one match because of an injury. And again, he was probably like 78 at the time, so he's probably telling the truth. Hogan maintains that Vince changed the heel face dynamic and he just did what Vince wanted to do. But I think it was the...
Of course he did.
it was the changing from a three-match series to a one-match series that Hogan was going to win that Michaels took most umbrance with. And as you said, throughout the match, oversold pretty much every move to the point of taking a big boot to the face. He dropped down to the mat and flip back up and drop again and spin. being hung up on the top turnbuckle and being kicked in the midriff shot him a further 4 foot in the air. it was quite the spectacle. And yeah, like I said, for me, it was their only match in their career, their only singles match. Builders Icon versus Icon, and it just completely ruined it for me. Because even at that time, Hogan was having, you know, decent-ish matches in WWE, doing what Hogan does. And then Shawn Michaels, obviously, the next night on Raw, cut a very... very sarcastic promo, kind of summing up exactly what he felt the night before. So even having 24 hours to reflect on his behavior, he was standing by it completely. I just think Shawn Michaels is a dick, really. And I know Hulk Hogan's a dick, but Shawn Michaels is a dick.
Shawn's a bigger dick.
Yeah, Shawn is a bigger dick.
Easily.
Yeah. So I'm putting that on.
It was one of my picks. Like I said, I did a little bit of research into that, the post interviews that they've done that over the last few years or so. And they both kind of knew they were in the wrong. Hogan still kind of blames Vince, saying it was Vince's decision, but he kind of does see where he was harder to work with, and Shawn Michaels clearly says he felt like he was unprofessional, but he wanted to make Hogan earn the win, and he was gonna basically just ridicule him because he felt like he'd been overlooked by Hogan. But you know what? I'm still gonna veto it.
Boy, you might.
Yeah, just because I'm a dick, like Shawn Michaels.
Actually, you are the Shawn Michaels of Badlands.
And I'm gonna.
Well, does that make me the Marty Jannetty?
You are so very much the Marty Jannetty. You will get rid of a guy behind a bowling alley very, very soon, I think. I'm going to replace it with another match from WrestleMania 9, with James's Undertaker versus Giant Gonzalez match, and I'm going to replace it with another Hulk Hogan match.
Yeah, this is fair. This is one of my picks as well.
Yeah. So if you kind of don't know the story. Basically, at WrestleMania 9, Bret Hart was defending against Yokozuna, and after quite a brief match, Bret lost his title after Mr. Fuji interfered. And now, outraged by this, Bret's best friend forever, Hulk Hogan, emerged from backstage to come and comfort Bret. And for reasons only known to himself, Mr. Fuji challenged Hogan to a match against Yokozuna right there and then. Hogan accepted with the wishes of Bret, clearly given when he waved off whilst he was still pretending to be affected by the salt. Hogan hit the big boot, leg drop, and wins his fifth WWF title in 22 seconds. The reason why this goes on, not because of Hogan winning the title in 22 seconds, but it was a clear example of Hogan being the political and little dickhead that he was for all that time. He had to be the one on the top at WrestleMania. Hogan must pause, and he screwed over who was arguably the best wrestler in the world back then in Bret Hart.
I thought you were going to say Yokozuna then.
To be fair, Yoko was probably a better wrestler than Hogan at that time. At least he was able to like climb the top ropes and do moves like that. But yeah, Hogan screwed Bret Hart, and then Bret, who seemed to have a fascination with getting screwed by the WWF, would soon leave the company. And yeah, so I'm going to replace Hogan versus Shawn Michaels with Hogan versus Yokozuna.
Oh, nothing I do about it. Do we know that was Hogan politicking? Is there any evidence?
Come on. Yeah.
Have you read Brett's book?
No.
He said it was Hogan. He apparently said like to the day of the show he was booked to win. He was booked to retain the title, and he got that from Vince himself. And then Vince tried to say that's what you thought you had.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw Hogan at. He said the few days beforehand, or the couple of weeks beforehand, he saw Hogan, but Hogan kind of kept himself to himself, wouldn't really interact with Bret. But then the day of the event, Hogan was like, "Oh, all right, brother. Oh, can't wait to work later on, brother." And then Brett got told what happened. But obviously, Brett wasn't happy, but what could Brett do? And Hogan, well, Vince said, we're going to make it up to you. That's one of the reasons he won the King of the Ring, was to make it up to him. And the original plan as well for SummerSlam that year, it was going to be Brett v. Hogan for the time. And they actually done a photo shoot, and the two of them was like a tug of war for the belt. And I think there is a picture of it somewhere online, because I've definitely have seen it, but it's hard to try. You've got people like Bruce Pritchard and that says, oh, that's not true. But Bruce Pritchard, his show is entertaining, but I'll be honest, I haven't really listened to his show for a while, and the man's a compulsive liar. Listen to my Nick Holder's interview. but yeah, Brett said, Hogan did play the card, and apparently Brett went to Hogan afterwards. And no, Brett went to Hogan after Vince told Brett what was happening. And Brett confronted Hogan about it. And it was rather after this event, or when he realized SummerSlam match would get cancelled. And Hogan's supposed to have said to Brett, you don't know the full story, brother. It's out of my hands. So I like to believe it's Hogan that done it, but it might have been a bit of both with him and Vince. But yeah, if you read Brett's book, I forgot what everything he said, like word for word, but he's pretty convinced it was Hogan, which it makes sense.
That's more evidence than I've heard from Mags.
he said everything I was going to say.
I just feel like Vince is so strong-willed. Or did Hulk Hogan have a hold over Vince?
I think it was because Hogan drew so much money.
Yeah.
If you look at that, the likes of Cena now, or Cena over the past decade or so, because Cena drew so much money, if Cena pitched an idea, the Nexus being buried, for example, that was apparently Cena's idea, that he kind of super Cena'd and won. Vince is going to go over it.
I'm not gonna break another story, but I've got something with Nexus coming up.
I hope you haven't got a bit of bad news for us.
Oh, I wish.
I hope it's Heath. Is it Heath?
No, it's actually the Black John Cena. He was often referred to as that because he looked so much like Cena.
Who's that?
From the Nexus, like David Otunga.
No, Darren Young.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
That's a great guess.
Yeah.
Thank you. Emailed me this morning, and I think we're getting it sorted out next week or two.
Look at that. He's dropped about 4 or 5 bombshells for his show on this Badlands episode.
I know. If we ever want this episode to finish, we just have to mention dead people from now on.
Yeah.
You're getting the scoops, guys. Come on.
You're getting
the scoops. Breaking news. Talk spot. Listen to the scoops while it happens. I haven't listened to TalkSport such a long time because after I realised that the Sun owns them, and being a Liverpool fan, I won't listen to them.
Fair play. I think Paul pretends to be a Liverpool fan as well.
Well, they were my boyhood team. I'm not really big into football anymore, but I was happy to see them win.
It was a great win. Right, James, what we need from you now, sir, is a topic for a future guest. What kind of Mount Rushmore would you like to hear about? Maybe possibly worst pay-per-views ever. Not that I'm that. Trying to sway the electorate.
I'm tempted with that. I'll tell you what I'll do, because Halloween is not too far around the corner. My kids love Pennywise. I'm a terrible father, by the way. Just letting them watch that kind of stuff. Top 4 clowns in wrestling.
Oh wow.
I think that'd be interesting. Obviously you got your obvious choice, but I can think of a couple of others who I would like to pick.
I've got my pick straight away.
Have you?
Yeah.
ICP.
No.
Well, at least it's my turn to go first next week, so I can have Doink.
Well, Doink would be one of them. Let me just get my research up, because I involved him in some of my matches. I would have Doink, obviously, and then I'd have Dink, then Wink and Pink.
That's a big topic, this.
There's quite a few.
Yeah, it should be fun. I've got, I like Crazy Steve. I'm a fan of Crazy Steve, Impact Wrestling.
Yeah. Don't give Paul any help. He'll be saying no, Crazy Steve straight away. First pick.
who was telling us about Crazy Steve the other day?
Was it not Colin? Was it Colin?
Colin, yeah. Apparently Crazy Steve is registered blind.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, that's right.
We never knew that until Colin from Synergy told us.
I don't think it was Colin. I think it was Dan? I think it was Dan.
Yes, it was Dan. Yes. Yeah, you're right.
It's a great topic, though. It'll be fun to research wrestling clowns.
I'm looking forward to it.
Really like it.
Yeah. James, let everyone know where they can get hold of you on social media, where they can get hold of your podcast for all these exclusive interviews that you've been dropping bombs on us.
Thank you. Yeah, everyone, thanks for listening. You can find me on Twitter at 90s Wrestling Pod. You'll see a big picture of my lovely face. I'm also on Instagram at 90s Wrestling Podcast. And I've actually got a Facebook page as well, which I'm not really active on Facebook, so it's no point going on there. My main focus now is the YouTube channel, so you'll find that 90s Wrestling Podcast. But like I said earlier, I'm also still putting the content podcast form, that 90s Wrestling Podcast, which you can find me on Anchor, Spotify, and all your good listening places. And I've got a funny story to tell you as well before we sign off.
It'll be better than Paul's intro.
This happened to me the other day.
For damn sure.
So my normal job, I'm a builder. So I was leaving a message for a gentleman. So it said, leave your message after the tone. Beep. And normally I would go, hi, this is James from such and such company, just calling in regards. So that's what I would normally say. So
I know what's coming.
Because I've been so used to doing my intro, they went, leave a message after the tone. Beep. Hello, this is James from the 90s Wrestling Podcast. And then I realized, I was like, shit, delete.
And I'm here to flag your driveway. Wow, that's brilliant.
Oh, I told my brother's the most casual wrestling fans. He checks out my show once in a while, but he's the most casual fans. I told him, like, even my friend doesn't watch wrestling, that they pissed themselves laughing. But it was fun.
It's a great story. Paul, your favourite time of the week? Time to get rid of me.
I have a similar problem because I just fluff saying goodbye to everyone now, and it takes 10 minutes to get through any goodbye I ever do. See, even cracking that joke, I've thrown myself off my outro.
I knew it would.
I shouldn't bother. Thank you for listening, everyone. Hope you enjoyed another episode of Badlands. If you want to hear more from us, you can find our some of our vintage episodes over on the Smark to Death Network. Just type in Smark to Death Network on your podcast engine of choice. If you want to hear more from Magsy, you can find him on Twitter at Dej Kirkby. You can find some of his other excellent podcasts like Why We Watch, Talk at the Table, and Five Rounds Pod over on the Visionaries Global Media podcast network. Yeah. You can find me over on Five Nerds Go. That's at Five Nerds Go. And again, type Five Nerds Go into your podcast machine. And obviously, if you want our up-to-date episodes each and every week, follow the at Cheershot Media or subscribe to Cheershot Radio Network, where we released every Thursday. We re-release next Thursday. Join us again. Until then, stay safe and always use your head. Thank you.
thechairshot.com. Always use your head.